Hello, and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And I'm Daryl Etherington.
And we're mostly just going to do one thing this week, which is review the new Netflix film, To Five Bloods, which is a new Spike Lee film. Before we do that, it's not really news, but I did just want to mention the fact that this weekend, so if you are listening to Original Content promptly, the weekend of Juneteenth in the U.S., Watchmen, which is an HBO series, is available for free, the entire first season on HBO.com. And since we didn't ever do a full review of Watchmen on the podcast, I just wanted to say that everyone should watch Watchmen who hasn't done so already. Daryl, you also saw it, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I loved it.
So you guys both finished it?
Yes, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't. I think I got confused.
It's definitely a confusing attempt, but it's worth it. Stick it out. It's not as confusing as previous Lindelof projects, I would say. And it's also way, way better. So don't make the... I mean, you couldn't on HBO.com, but like, don't make the mistake of being like, oh, look, it's Watchmen. I'll watch this and then watch the Zack Snyder movie, which I'm not against the Zack Snyder movie, but it's nothing compared to this. This is a fantastic series and everybody should watch it.
When did Watchmen come out again, the series?
Last year, 2019.
Was it last year? I was like, was it last year or this year? But it only felt like it was last year because this year has been...
Yeah, that was what I was wondering. Like, did it come out in 2020? Because if it did...
It came out at the end of 2019, yeah.
That's right.
I did go through like a phase where like I was like, we're going to be in quarantine. Like, I need to save things. I don't need to rush through things. But it sounds like this was not part of that. This was just, I really think that I just maybe binged too many episodes in a row and found myself confused and was like, fuck it, never mind.
I think we didn't do a full review, but I think we mentioned it at one point. And I think it's, that first episode is really confusing, especially if you haven't read the comic. And then I think over time, things start to make more sense and they start to fill in more of the context. But I think it's really confusing at the start.
Yeah. I also don't feel like it's a binge show necessarily.
I think that could
if
have been my
problem. You got no
choice
because HBO is going to put it behind the paywall, then do binge it. But otherwise, savor it.
You know that when Lindelof sent out, or when HBO sent out the screeners for the final season of The Leftovers, which is the show he did before, they included a note from Damon Lindelof which said, please don't binge this. Which, I mean, the season three of The
Leftovers.
That's
ridiculous.
Is one of the greatest, you know, achievements in television. So he can say whatever the hell he wants, but that's also a dumb thing to say.
It's cruel. It's like a video game review. It's being like, don't play this all at once. It's like, what do you mean? That's all. I have to do that. That's what I have to do.
And I mean, just to state the obvious, Watchmen is about superheroes. So if you don't like superheroes, this is the one to give it a shot because it's actually just so good. I think it's kind of for everyone. But be aware that there will be superheroes in it, and also that part of the reason they're making it available now is because it actually is about, in a lot of ways, questions of race and police brutality, and I'm not 100% satisfied with how it wraps up that discussion in the finale, but just the way that it really shines a light on those issues, and did so, you know, way before our current moment in time, I think, is... very impressive.
Yeah, it has the primary plot line is about law enforcement, and it has like retrospectively such an interesting perspective on that. It's not prescient per se, because it's like it's not like it's like predicts what's happening now, but it's raises a lot of questions before they were raised in like the public sphere as they're being raised now, you know. So it's great, it's fantastic. It also starts, it's not a spoiler, it starts with the Tulsa race massacre, so that is also like, I mean, it's one of those things where you're like, it's probably just because culturally this was coming to a head and like it was there and the people were feeling it and everything they were creating, but you know, you look at it now and you're like, wow, like what's happening relative to what's going on in the world?
No, I agree. So yeah, go check out Watchmen. If you don't have an HBO or HBO Max subscription. You can watch it for free this weekend. Otherwise, take your time with it. Yeah, let's move on to Defy Bloods. Did you guys know much about the movie? Did you go into it with any expectations?
I mean, I knew it was Spike Lee, right?
Yeah, that's about all I knew, too.
Yeah, and I didn't know what the premise was, but I did Google it right before I started watching and saw that it was about, like, Vietnam vets going back to Vietnam for some sort of adventure or journey. But that was, like, all I had off the top.
Yeah, I think I actually not because of this movie, but just because of trying to be a little bit, you know, like thinking more about these issues and having that influence, you know, the things I'm interested in watching right now. I finally watched Black Klansman over the weekend, which is the movie Spike Lee made before this, and then saw and really liked Black Klansman, and then read a really, really positive review of The Five Bloods in the New York Times. And so I think I went into this like having really, really, really high expectations, which it maybe didn't quite meet. I mean, I think it's a good movie, but maybe wasn't like quite the life-changing experience that I was hoping for.
Yeah, I would say I kind of am in the same boat. Like, I liked it, but I didn't like love it. But there were certain things that I also really warmed up to throughout the film. Like, at first, some of the like stylization I wasn't like in tune with yet, you know, like there's certain things, like really simple things, like the font of the captions when people are speaking Vietnamese or a different language, the like switches between 16:9 and 3:4, 4:3, and the kind of going from like UHD to, you know, old school kind of fuzzy picture and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like at the very beginning was super jarring to me, and by like midway through the film, it like I realized, one, that I had gotten more used to it and in tune with it, and how much more it helped the storytelling, you know. So it kind of took me out at first, and then actually ended up bringing me more into the story the further we got along. But I did feel like it was super duper long, and that it maybe didn't need to be quite as long as it was.
I did feel that it was long, especially thinking back on it. I didn't feel like it was that long while watching it, surprisingly. But then I was like, wow, that was a long movie, like afterwards. I haven't seen Black KKK Klansman, so I was kind of like, I don't have that as a comparison. I haven't seen it recently. I really liked this. I liked it a lot more than I thought I was going to. And at first I found some things like weird, and maybe it's because like I'm just not as familiar with Spike Lee's whole approach overall. But like, I was like, oh, what? This is confusing, and I don't know that I love it. And then by the end of it, I think it was not jarring anymore, and it felt very cohesive. And then I found it surprisingly moving for the kind of movie it was. Like I was pretty emotionally affected by it by the end of it, and I wasn't really anticipating that I would be.
I also thought that the score was really like well thought out, right? Like there, it almost has this like 90s Paramount vibe to it, okay. Right? Where it's like it's like so classic a movie score. With a movie that in some ways is very, you know, kind of classic, and then in some ways is like completely thwarts any idea of what a movie is, right? And just like does its own thing and is very innovative and kind of revolutionary in that way. So I just thought like I said, stylistically, like with or without the content, like taking the content entirely out of it, just like stylistically, I do think that it was very impressive film, and they did a lot and managed to do it without me being like, that was too much, you know what I mean? Like it ended up being just right while being a lot. You know what I mean?
I mostly felt the same way. I did feel like there were individual moments, and I had the same thing with Black Klansman, where And it's actually kind of hard to separate the style from the content a little bit, because I think part of the reason that he's adopted at least some elements of his style, he being Spike Lee in his last few movies, is, or at least these two movies, is that he's trying to like make a didactic and political point, right? And so in this film, it's really about the idea of the African-American presence in the military in the Vietnam War, and the idea that there were so many of these black soldiers who sacrificed so much, and ultimately, you know, what for? And then I think also there's this parallel narrative of just highlighting African-American heroism in general. Like, there'll be times where people will just mention somebody from, you know, African-American culture, black history, and then they'll just cut to a photo of this person.
Yeah, they throw up a photo. Yeah. I like that. I don't know. It was like there's so much going on with the like jam up of various like genres and stuff, but I thought that was one of the, like, even this is too overly simplistic, but to say like, okay, he took like a traditional like kind of like war action movie or something, and then like inserted these like emphatic, in your face like teaching moments, like historical teaching moments, which I thought was super effective, right? There, in reality, he's doing way more than that. Like, it's not just an action movie or a war movie or whatever. There's all kinds of other genres in there playing with it. But like, even just on that basic level, like, I found that super effective and a nice, like, it's not really a subversion of the genre, because it's not like he's saying, I don't think he's ever saying these genres are bad. I think he's like paying homage to them, as well as then also introducing like some political activism into them, right?
And yeah, I think he's like, if saying anything, that there's a story not being told in the traditional war movie, and now I'm going to tell you one of those stories.
Yeah, but I also don't think he's saying, but let's throw out this genre because it's bad. Yeah. Like, I think he definitely, it's clear from the cinematography and all the other choices that he's like, he very clearly loves film and the history of film, and like is so careful with his attention to like how those things work, and then also, yeah, he like shows their shortcomings and then shows like ways that they can be improved, or ways that you can like add to them in more interesting ways, right?
And I mean, so we should, I guess, maybe talk a little bit more about what the actual plot of the film is, which, as Jordan said, is these Vietnam veterans from the US who come back to Vietnam in essentially the present day because they found this shipment of gold bars during the war, and then it was essentially lost, and now they've sort of gotten a new, basically like a mudslide has revealed that what might be the tail of the plane that they found. And so they're going back now to try to get this gold, also to try to find the body of their dead commander, who they call Stormin Norman, and is played by Chadwick Boseman, who has both played Jackie Robinson and the Black Panther. And it basically jumps back and forth between present day, which is done, like Jordan was saying, in this very more or less contemporary widescreen style, and then flashbacks where it's much more of like a square frame with what looks like old, you know, newsreel footage or just like older film. And then one of the interesting things about the older footage is the fact that the actors who play the older soldiers, they just play themselves, and there's no like de-aging makeup or special effects. It's just them acting as their younger selves.
Yeah, that's, I really like that. Also, I found there was like, and we could talk about more, it's not spoilers to talk about formatting, I guess, but like there was a point where they moved, because they did have the extreme letterboxed, I don't know what the actual ratios are for film, right? But they were 4:3 for like the classic, like as if this was shot in the 70s, like shortly on the heels of the Vietnam War type segments. And then they had the, like the extreme letterbox, like Western or whatever, like style for modern day. But then they shifted to a full 16:9, like true, like whatever today's, you know, TV widescreen, Netflix widescreen standard is at some point. I wasn't sure what that they did do that. And that's where you got, I don't know what else he did with like sort of like color and everything else. But it, to me, it was like, it was when there was also like, this is the nicest image. Like this is when he wants, and it was showing off. It was when they entered the jungle, I think, was basically the cutoff point for that. And you really got some of the best visuals of the movie through that. But like, I don't know what the what that was meant to convey. Of like, it's almost as if like it was a switch with the genres, because it was kind of like, again, I don't want to, let's not talk about that because then we're going to get into spoilers. So just an interesting stylistic choice to note if you're watching it without spoilers. Yeah, but just watch for those changes and see what you think. So.
And I mean, this is a little bit of a simplification, but I do think sometimes when people talk about style in movies and visual style in movies, sometimes that style is about, you know, it's making the movie going experience as like seamless as possible and making you forget that you're watching a movie. And I think that in general, Spike Lee isn't interested in that. Like, not to say that his movies are purely political or didactic exercises, but I think a lot of times he's really interested in reminding you that you're watching a movie, and I think a lot of those choices are very much about that, among other things, and making you think about this movie as part of a longer tradition of war movies and other kinds of movies.
Yeah, I think he does that to great effect here, like multiple times. He like won't let you get comfortable in the artifice, which is like the goal of most others, right? And that happens with soundtrack. He has a longtime composing partner who like
Terrence did all this,
right, who did the instrumental score. And then there's also like great use of like, there's Marvin Gaye and there's some other tracks in there, they're not used in a background fashion. Let's put it that way, right? Like they're always used as like, now you pay attention to this and remember that this is a movie, right? It's a really interesting approach, and it's like something, I think that's what the cause of my like initial jarring reaction was, until it became something that like I accepted and I went with. And then it's amazing to see that, because you're like, I think you're taught, or you expect based on other film going experiences, that that's key to like how the movie achieves its emotional impact. Right. But then like with this movie and with other Spike Lee movies, like he's able to achieve a high level of emotional impact while ignoring that key cardinal kind of like filmmaking rule. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's like, he makes you think about the fact you're watching a movie, but you're still incredibly emotionally engaged, and you still really, you know, want these guys to get out of the jungle alive, even as things look that looks less and less likely.
I felt like I kind of feel like it's more theatrical. Like it feels to me more like what a musical or a stage play would do. Like, especially there's lots of monologuing and like also to great effect. And so I guess that's probably at least part of the tradition that he's coming from. But this was a huge distraction, but I did want to address, like, you're talking about the old actors playing playing themselves. Like, that's really cool. And initially it was a little bit weird to me. And then I was thinking of the most glaring opposite example, which is the stupid, terrible Irishman movie.
All right, here we go. Go on.
I didn't watch Irishman. I got out of that one, luckily.
I know.
A movie good even move. Longer than this one. By an hour.
One that you feel every minute of because it's terrible. that has like the worst like de-aging you've ever seen, right? Like it's like so stupid and so bad and so intentional. And then this is like, no, I'm not gonna do that. Like, but it also has, and they bring it up throughout, like multiple times in the movie, characters, especially the guide, is talking about like, you never leave war, and like that's what it's meant to convey. You know, if you're remembering back, like you don't remember from the position of outside of yourself as a young, most people don't, I don't anyway, right? Like you kind of just think of yourself as a consistent whole across your life, and you are always inside that perspective looking out. You're not like third party to it, right? So that's that kind of reflects that too.
Well, to be honest with you, like, I only noticed that they didn't switch out actors the second flashback. The first one, Chadwick Boseman is so hypnotic, and obviously, like, he was the one that was missing because it's a foursome in the sun. So, like, literally 100% of my attention was on him during the first flashback to the point where I didn't even notice. And then I was like, oh my God, they didn't use different actors or anything. They're just exactly the same. But I do think that that was a really nice touch. I thought that that's like, and it probably is as deep as you just said it is, but I didn't necessarily go through that process at the time. I just thought, like, you know, why not?
Right. We're all adults here. Why do we have to, like, play make-believe with that? Like, it definitely made me think that the Irishman should have just not, like, they should have saved themselves the $100 million and just had Robert De Niro and Al Pacino, like, without any de-aging, because it would have been fine.
They could have just, like, started their conversations with, like, we're 22 now.
One thing I also wanted to talk about was, I mean, the cast in general, I think, is all great.
Yeah.
Like, even people on the edges, like, there are these two guys who work for this organization called LAM, Simon and Seppo, and they're played by these two actors who played KKK members in Black Klansmen, which I thought was, like, great because it just made me so uneasy and suspicious of them from the beginning. But, I mean, what I really want to talk about was Delroy Lindo, because I think, like, this is, as hypnotic as Chadwick Boseman is, and they definitely lean on his charisma, because I don't actually think he's in much of the movie, like, probably, like,
no, like, total screen time.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, I think this is, like, Delroy Lindo's movie. Like, he just is so, like, amazing in it, and just has to convey so many complicated emotions and just, like, hold the screen. And we were talking about the, you know, the monologuing directly to camera, and he does a lot of that. And it's just, like, such an amazing performance. Like, it, yeah, I'm just totally in awe of it.
Yeah, no, it's definitely his thing, and he's not the hero of the movie, but, like, yeah, it's his movie, and it's, like, it's amazing. I mean, I've seen him in countless things. He's been in so many things over the years, although not in recent memory for me that I could think of, but, like, he's always been in a secondary role. I think he's always been very good. I think the most indelible performance of him for me was in Get Shorty, actually, weirdly, because somehow I had a period of my life where I loved Get Shorty, and I watched it, I think, like, I don't know, 16 times in a very short period of time. But he was in that, he was fantastic in that, but in this it's like, his performance is fantastic, and he has a lot on his plate. Like, there's so much he's asked to do and to express, and it's so complicated, and he just does a really, really fantastic job.
So should we jump into spoilers a little bit?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
So if you have not seen all of The Five Bloods, you should stop listening now. I guess, yeah, I'll just quickly outline what happens. So they are the four Bloods who are surviving. They are joined by Delroy Lindo's character's name is Paul. So his son, Paul's son, who's, you know, an adult man. They clearly have a lot of unresolved history and feelings towards each other, and they go and take this tour of Vietnam. So a lot of the movie, or the first maybe half of the movie, is really them just sort of being in Vietnam and, you know, a lot of it, like, dealing with their own feelings about that, dealing with their own feelings about Norman's death, and also seeing how Vietnam has changed since they were there. Although, like, you can see that there's still a lot of scars from the war, which I've never been to Vietnam, but from people I've talked to who've been there, that's definitely true. And then they go into the jungle and they find the gold, and then there's, like, a whole thing where they find this, like, minefield, and one of the Bloods is killed in this, like, amazingly grotesque scene where, like, what you see what happens to him after the mine goes off. It's, like, so horrifying. It's sort of funny.
It's really upsetting because, it's, like,
really over the top.
The mine goes off, and, like, instantly I was like, well, that is fucking terrible, but it's over. Yeah. And then the camera pans over to him and like, no, it's not over yet. Like there's still a good like 15 seconds of him struggling essentially and dying before you in this horrible way. And like, I don't know, your mind just goes to like, if a mine explodes underneath you, like it's over.
Please, yeah.
Like that.
Please let
yeah,
it be
yeah.
over
not.
Instantly.
It's terrible.
Instead of like having to like lie there with your arms and legs and intestines blown off like for another few yeah. seconds.
Yeah, that was one of the ones where like that was one of the moments in the movies where I'm like, well, this movie is like, it is not what I expected at all. But like there's plenty of like crazy genre shifts or like whatever, but this was, that was the most extreme for me, where it was like I was, whatever else I was expecting, I was not expecting this kind of like super gruesome ultra violence to be in this movie, and there it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I was expecting there to be more violence for sure, because at this mm-hmm. point, I mean, we've gotten war footage. The Clark Peters character has been like given a gun, which you sort of, you know, by any sort of
yeah, the gun has to do something. That's right.
But like, I wasn't expecting it to go to that level, and a lot of what happens later. So then the son, David, also steps on a landmine, and luckily luckily for him, not so luckily for everyone, for them, this, group that we've met earlier called LAM, which is basically about trying to remove undetonated landmines from, you know, the battlefields of the country. They stumble across them and they help him escape from this, exploding landmine. But then the Delroy Lindo character decides, you know what? Like, you found us. Like, we've been blown. And so we have to tie up and maybe execute these white people later on.
That seems to be what they're going towards, yeah.
And then they're, like, leading them through, tied up through the jungle. But then eventually the other Bloods and his son manage to, like, sort of take him by surprise. And so it doesn't actually change much, but they're basically, he's now the sort of not in charge of the operation, and the LAM people are freed. They come out of the thickest part of the jungle, and they meet their guide. But then they're also ambushed essentially by a group of Vietnamese soldiers who say that the gold is theirs. And this leads to there's one gunfight, which then leads to another gunfight at a temple. The end result of, and then Delroy Lindo's character actually wanders off into the jungle where he's found and killed after giving like a really, really amazing monologue. Oh, and then I think what's really important is that you also find out that he was the one who killed Norman accidentally in battle during Vietnam. And he's been sort of carrying this secret with him and this guilt with him the whole time. And sort of at the end of that, basically, most of the Bloods have been killed except for the Clark Peters character and then Paul's son and then two of the LAM members. And so they walk out of the jungle with the gold and live happily ever after.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot. And there's a lot of stuff we left out, but that's the gist of what happened. And I have to say that I was not crazy about some of the turns that the plot took. Like, for example, in that initial scene with the landmine, I felt like it was shot in such a way because it just went on. So this character is giving a really long speech and he's just like backing away in this really yeah. weird way. And it's just like in this very drawn out, extended way. And they even like draw attention to it, because one of them's like, you like walking around, backing away from us like a crazy person. And so it's like very kind of doesn't feel entirely convincing that he just sort of backs away into this landmine.
I thought he was going to get shot because he was waving exactly. around the gold, and they had earlier teased like there are people with guns watching them from the trees. Right. Like, so.
Yeah. So it was a little, I mean, again, the fact that he dies, is killed by a landmine makes dramatic sense, but the way they staged it was a little strange. And then right after that, the LAM people show up just in time to save them felt like a little bit much. And then, like you said, it it really does sort of switch genres in that last, I don't know, hour or so, where it becomes, not entirely, but for a large extent, this much more kind of high-octane action movie where they're, you know, holding off a whole squad of Vietnamese soldiers in this temple.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like a, I don't know what you, what genre or whatever, but there's like a thing where like, okay, now where there's few of us left, we have to essentially fortify this position and then defend it. And that's like the epic final scene. And that's what they go to right from here. And a great setting, like that temple is like a really interesting, fantastic setting for them to do it at. And I think it works really well with Reno's character being like the, you know, the chief big asshole guy on the other side, like in his all white suit. And he ends up wearing the MAGA hat, which is pretty funny too.
Right. So this is Jean Reno, who plays like a French, introduced initially as this guy who's supposed to just help them get the gold out of, like, sell the gold and get it out of the country, but turns out to have betrayed them and hired these Vietnamese soldiers to steal the gold from them, and is, you know, is actually leading the villains at the end.
Yeah, after they have a really good, his introduction scene I really liked, because he has like the back and forth with Paul, with Delroy Lindo's character, with like the, where he's just recounting sort of France's history of essentially being pretty shitty at war, I guess, and then and the other guy's countering with like, yeah, well, you guys didn't do too great either in like Vietnam. It was a good back and forth. But yeah, it sets up later that they're gonna although they don't actually have a final confrontation, because he's with the other group. Like, the final confrontation with Delroy Lindo isn't with Jean Reno.
Right, at that point, Delroy Lindo is dead. And, I mean, his big conversation is ultimately with his memory of Chadwick Boseman's character. And then he has conciliatory conversation with these Vietnamese soldiers who then really, really, really kill him.
Yeah, they're made more angry by his thing. But I think that he's really great, and we talked about how great he is. That's one moment where he's really great, is like he has that confrontation with Boseman, which is a really moving scene. And like so he's been hinting throughout that he sees Sermon Norman every night, like is visited by him. And basically in this scene you realize like it's because he has unresolved guilt over having killed him. And what happens here that hasn't happened previously, apparently, is that Norman forgives him and, like, basically says, like, it was an accident. Like, it's fine. Like, you shouldn't have carried this all around. And then, like, what really Lindo's strength right there is actually convincing you that all this weight has lifted. Like, his delivery while he's digging his own grave and, like, his attitude and everything else there is so fantastic and so light and so such a marked contrast from what he's been throughout the whole rest of the movie. It really is convincing and like super effective, I think.
It's also a moment where I think the stylistic shifts that we're talking about really pay off, because every other scene involving Chadwick Boseman is done in this old fashioned film style. And then this the one scene where it's shot in the contemporary style, and you're like, oh, like this isn't a flashback. He's, you know, this is in the present day jungle. I was going to say he's really there, but he's not really there, but in some sense he is. Right. Like it's not just him thinking about the past.
Yeah. I mean, he's partially snake venom, I guess. At
right. Point. We also forgot the whole, he got bitten by a snake, and then like Delroy Lindo did, and he's like trying to like suck it out of his arm, and then he's walking into the jungle. He also is like carrying a backpack full of gold, which just gets caught on a branch. And yeah, he has a very eventful walk in the jungle.
I did like the scene though, where he's laying on his back, just got bit by a snake, like backpack hanging in a tree branch that feels like it was like a purposefully set trap, but really it just like happened by chance. And he's just like, yeah. Are you joking right now? This is a joke. You lie.
But he does. He then gives it up. He's like, well, this is, Norman, you got it. That's your goal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, because the whole like rest of the movie, he's basically been the one person who more than anyone else is like, don't you fucking touch my goal. This is my goal.
Yeah.
And so to see him give it up like that is also really powerful. I will say one other thing I didn't like about the ending was the revelation that the reason Paul and David, his son, have had such a tense relationship is because, or at least one of the reasons, is because David's mother died in childbirth. And that just felt like a very kind of pat and cliched
tropey.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't need to be a revelation. It could just be like, yeah, he came back from Vietnam with PTSD and was not an emotionally available father.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. They didn't need to give them that easy, an additional motivation. He had plenty of motivation to be a bad dad prior to that, right?
Yeah, I agree 100%. It just, like, as it was coming out of his mouth, I was like, oh, this feels like a really neat ribbon that isn't necessary, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just it's like an upping the ante type move when you're like, the stakes are plenty high. Like, we get it. Like, with emotional stakes are very high already, right?
Just describing the movie, it feels like there's so much stuff in it, which is partly why it's long, but doesn't necessarily feel long. But yeah, it's just like, because there's like, depending on how you count, you know, like 5 or 6 different major characters, and then they want to give all of them a decent amount of time, and then there's like some fairly big turns in the last hour. So it's this weird thing where I feel like the core story is really simple. It's just they go for the gold, other people try to stop them, they have to fight them off, but like they add so many different layers of complications. So yeah, I have to say, I never felt, well, maybe at the beginning there were a few moments where I was kind of like, wow, it feels like I've been watching this for a while, and we're only like 20 or 30 minutes in, and so I still had 2 hours to go. But once they got into the jungle, I had no complaints about the length.
Yeah, well, the jungle stuff, I mean, everything really moved along quite quickly once they did that. Like, you mean like once they left the guide, right?
Yeah, once they left the guide, or even I think once they left Hanoi.
Yeah, it just
felt like it took a while to get there. But like once they got into the jungle, I felt like things moved pretty quickly, actually. You know, like it was pretty fast paced, particularly with all of the like flashbacks and like kind of the drip drip of information that you're being given as a viewer. But like the setup did feel like it took slightly longer than it needed to. And like one scene in particular that felt extra long, and I don't know if this felt this way to you guys, but the boat scene,
the boat stuff did feel long. I was gonna comment on that because I feel like that's like a direct, like Apocalypse Now is a really long movie that like really takes its time getting places in some of it, and especially the trip up river, like that is based on Heart of Darkness, right? Like that in the book too is also a long drawn on purpose, right? Because it's kind of like this lazy spin into madness or whatever. And I feel like that was very intentional here in this movie as well.
Yeah, now that I look back, it feels to me less like the boat scene in particular is egregiously long, but all of those early scenes are very leisurely paced and kind of go for longer than they would in sort of like a conventional action adventure movie, where like that first reunion in the bar, and again, I think there are good reasons for it, because it's about like reestablishing the relationship between all these different characters and establishing, you know, and then like also like sort of nodding towards the Viet Cong who are in the bar, introducing the tour guide, but like all those, and then like the boat scene, and then the bar scene where we first meet the Lam activists. Like all those scenes kind of go on for a long time, like, and you know, I think individually I've never thought like, oh, this is just unbearably long, but the cumulative effect is that we kind of don't really get to the meat of the story until an hour or hour and a half, like an hour into the movie.
Yeah,
but a lot of that has to be in there because you're like establishing the characters and the plot.
Yeah, yeah. I think if I had a new, like, if I knew that it was classed as like a action movie or whatever at the beginning, I would have felt like that way, but I didn't. So I felt like the first half was all like, it didn't feel like it was like not getting anywhere, because it was like, maybe this is the movie, right? But then afterwards, I said it was classified and like Netflix is like action adventure or something.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, I think the character stuff is much more interesting than the action stuff, because I don't necessarily think that any of the action is done particularly badly, but not particularly well either. It's like, yeah, sure, here's a gunfight. And I mean, what I do like is that they don't do like crazy CGI or anything like that. It makes it feel super implausible. Although I guess I sort of suspect that if this were to play, that final gunfight were to play out in real life, all the Americans would have died. But like, it's done in a relatively low key, you know, kind of way, which I liked, but also meant that like, at the end of it, it's not, I don't think like the action scenes are what I'm going to take away from the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. They were fine, but you're right. They were pretty like, nobody was doing anything like, they weren't doing, what do you call it? What's the new style of thing like in John Wick, like gun kana or whatever. Like they weren't doing that stuff.
Right? Yeah. It's just, yeah.
It was more like an 80s war movie where people were shooting, and you're right. Like the Americans were very good at aiming the guns, and the other side was not good at them, despite the fact that the Americans used to use guns, haven't used guns in a long time. The other side seems to have guns all the time. That's their main thing that they do, right? So mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a little bit unrealistic. Maybe that's not the main thing they do, but they seem well, fair and comfortable.
Right. It's, yeah, I feel like if it was like young people who use guns all the time versus soldiers who haven't been soldiers for 40 years, I would put my money on the young people, but whatever.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
It's fine. It did, I guess it speaks to the fact that the different parts of the movie really feel like they're different genres, and that you go from like what feels much more naturalistic action at the beginning, at least naturalistic in terms of the relationship to the character and the plot, not necessarily in terms of the style. And then you go into like a much more heightened action movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I did like also that there was, we talked about how like Delroy Lindo is like the central character, but it's hard to define him as the hero. And like, yeah, this movie didn't really have a lot of heroes in general, right? Like very few people were.
Chadwick Boseman was a hero in my mind.
Yes, that's true. But he was also kind of mythical, right? Like he didn't really exist. Like he exists for very briefly in the super limited context. And we know nothing about him beyond that, except that he has two sisters back home who are like looking forward to receiving his remains, right? Like he doesn't have the chance to have flaws, but presumably he does in the same way that everybody else does. But that's like, that like extends from like the individual characters to like America to like, like, you know, like it's like everything is conflicted and difficult and has a lot of unseemly bad sides to it, right? Like even the arguably the best person, I guess, virtue wise well, I was gonna say it was the guy, the main character, I don't know, the one surviving Blood, right, in the end,
played by Clark Peters.
By Clark Peters. Otis. So he's arguably like the best person, but he's also like, you know, there's all kinds of crazy shit. Like he fathered this daughter. She grew up to adulthood. He didn't know anything about her in Vietnam. He has potentially like an oxy addiction. Like there's, you know, it's like nobody comes out great in this one. So
yeah. And that I think conversely, I mean, the Jean Reno character is definitely just sort of a kind of classic Hollywood villain, but the Vietnamese soldiers aren't really developed as characters, but it is at least acknowledged that they're not just crazy. Like,
yeah, they're not cartoonish villains.
Like, very real anger and very real history around, like, tied to the war. That's like, you know, partly why they're totally willing to kill a lot of these Americans.
Yeah, yeah. There's a really good thing, like that one river scene. Like, it is long and drawn out, but it's extremely uncomfortable. Partly because it just keeps going on, right? Which is like a good virtue of it. But it's like when the guy is yelling, like, you killed my mother and father. And like, I think he does a thing where he like speaks directly to frame and like it's eye to eye. Like he's making eye contact with the camera. Like that's pretty powerful. And also a good reminder that nobody is like simplistic in their motivations, right? Except again for Jean Reno, who is like a big cartoon Frenchman.
He's having a good time. He seems to be having a good time.
Yeah.
One other thing we should acknowledge is the fact that both Clark Peters and Isaiah Whitlock are reunited from The Wire. And Isaiah Whitlock Jr., who plays the Clay Davis in The Wire and has that classic line shit. And he does it in the movie, and it was so satisfying. I was so happy.
That's good. Good fan service, I assume.
That's an important final note. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Do we have any final thoughts about the Five Bloods?
No, I would just recommend it, even if it wasn't on your list. Like, it's a great, great movie, and it'll exceed your expectations for sure, regardless of whether you have high expectations or low expectations. So.
In the U.S., I also recommend watching it. I really enjoyed it, and it is like a special, you know, film stylistically, and the story it tells, and kind of the information that it yields. I think all of that is valuable.
Yeah,
cool. I also recommend it. You should check it out. It's an amazing movie. I would be shocked if it doesn't end up on a lot of best of the year lists. Although it's such a weird year for movies anyway. Let's wrap it up there. I will remind people, first of all, we have our new Twitter account at Original Content on Twitter. And what we're going to try to do, besides, you know, it's a way you can interact with us, so that you can always interact with our individual Twitter accounts, is we're going to tweet probably early next week about what our next review will be. So you can let us know ahead of time what you think of it, and we can potentially read that on the show. You can also always email us at originalcontent@techcrunch.com. You can leave us a positive review and subscribe in Apple Podcasts, any other podcast app. Thank you so much for listening. Jordan and Daryl, have a great weekend.
You too. The Twitter is Original Content. I don't know if we said that.
He said it.
I said it.
It's Original Content, the Twitter.